Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Something a little different today, and we've already started. If you want to go to the Sports Radio 810 Facebook page, you can watch this segment live on Facebook Live at the Sports Radio 810 Facebook page and see Nate Bucchetti. That's what most people want to see. But you can also see Jeff Chedia from NFL Network in studio with us every Tuesday in the 9 o'clock hour. And we were having a conversation about some things that happened over the weekend, especially between the Raiders and the Redskins. And that was a very significant game for Chiefs fans to watch because the Redskins are the next opponent, and the Raiders are thought to be the team that the Chiefs are going to have to butt heads with to win this AFC West division. But first, you were at the Seattle, Tennessee game. Your thoughts on what you saw at that game?
Before or after?
Whatever. Anything?
Well, I was saying in the break, it just seemed as if, and the Seahawks players, Doug Baldwin did say this, and Michael Bennett alluded to it when he spoke, that losing that game was not as painful as it would have been otherwise, given what was happening over the weekend, given the time spent preparing to protest or respond to President Trump's comments. And, you know, we were talking about the Redskins-Raiders game, and I would assume that that was a factor in that game as well for the Raiders, given how they played. And I say that because I know that Seattle, Richard Sherman said they spent a couple hours meeting as a team and then another 90 minutes meeting with coaches to talk about what they wanted to do. I'm assuming those conversations were emotional and heated. And it's very hard when you're traveling on the road. You're getting in. You're trying to get acclimated. You're trying to get prepared. You only have so much time to devote to actual game preparation. If you're taking 3+ hours to talk about what kind of stance you want to take, in regards to what the president is saying, and not only that, but you're talking about how you feel about it and what's involved. The Steelers have had a whole bunch of things going on since then.
Nobody's on the same page.
Nobody's on the same page. And so, and even last night you watched it, and it almost felt like they were choreographing a Broadway musical to a certain extent, because they don't want to do this. They do want to do this. They want to show solidarity. And I respect all that. But I do believe when you're spending that much time trying to figure out how you want to make a political statement, that at some point it's going to affect what you do on the field.
So you were, as we said, at the Seattle-Tennessee game, and you work for NFL.com and NFL Network and write for NFL.com. So what was your reaction to the entirety of the weekend, from President Trump's comments to how most of the NFL teams reacted to what was said and what happened, how it played out on Sunday?
Well, I think I'll break it up into segments. I mean, first of all, when it comes to the president, I'm oftentimes surprised at people's reaction at this point in the process, because he said a lot of things that are very inflammatory and very, very ignorant before he was president. And so part of this, when these things happen, I feel it's more like there's some kind of plan in place. A lot of big things are happening in the country with health care, with North Korea escalating, and so sometimes it feels like this is more about a distraction. It's more about getting people to talk about things other than what's more important. Those things are way more important than football or people kneeling for the national anthem. So
there's an absolute catastrophe taking place in Puerto Rico, which is an American territory,
yes,
which is part of,
yeah,
is part of this country.
No power, no yeah, clean water.
Yeah, I mean, it is devastation. He sent 18 tweets out, I think, about the NFL/player protests. He's not sent a tweet out about, Puerto Rico in the last 60 hours.
Yeah,
so
that's kind of where I stand with that. I don't get as upset about it, because I think I've come to expect it. I think the players, what I liked what I saw. I like the solidarity, the unity. I've heard people. I listened to this station a lot yesterday when I got back in town, because I wanted to hear what people were saying. And, you heard the gamut, predictably. You heard people say, I don't get it. I don't see what they're doing. They're disrespecting people. They're doing this and that. I've always felt, look, people have the right to do what they want to do. Nobody's breaking a law here. You know, it's free speech is a part of this country on both ends of it. The president has the right to say what he said. You know, Colin Kaepernick, people who are kneeling have a right to protest. And I think what has surprised me throughout this entire conversation, we talk about patriotism and disrespect for the military and the people who fought for this country. I think it's amazing how much we never talk about civil rights in this conversation, right? It's amazing how much that never comes up, which is a big part of this for the black players involved. Now, they may not be able to articulate it well, but they know, just as people who say, well, my uncle or my father or my grandfather fought for this country in this war or that war, which is beautiful, and we should honor that. We oftentimes ignore the relatives of these black players who fought in the civil rights movement, who were killed and slain and sacrificed so people could vote, you know, so people could eat in a restaurant at the same counter, so people could go to the same bathrooms and go to the same schools. And that's also part of this conversation. So I get that part of it for the black players, because I feel that. I feel like it's important to stand up if you feel like there's an injustice happening because somebody did that for you to have the things you have in this country. It never gets discussed. It rarely gets discussed, but it's a part of it. And unfortunately, when you talk about race in this country, walls come up, people get defensive, largely because one group has spent every day of their lives having to deal with it. Another group hasn't had to do that. So you already have an imbalance in the conversation. People don't want to be blamed for the past, but they want to bring up the past when it suits them. Right? People want to say, hey, let's have a president who's doesn't care about being PC, but when somebody else is not PC, it bothers them. You know, I'm about fairness. I'm about love. I'm about equality. And I think the NFL wants to stand for that, too. And I think regardless of what people said or what owners said, or how they said it, I think what was more important to me was a symbolic gesture of unity and of a commitment to love and respect and trying to do something that's a positive as opposed to something that's negative.
Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com is our in-studio guest. Once again, you can go to the Sports Radio 810 Facebook page if you'd like to watch it live.
I'm just kind of curious to see where we go from here, too. Is this something that continues on? You know, I mean...
Yeah, well, I think it's clear that, you know, from... Not to cut you off, but I think it's clear from what I saw the Seattle players saying that they're ready to continue this.
Right.
And what I saw from, you know, Greg Popovich, the San Antonio Spurs, the Warriors players and coaches, I think they feel like they're going to continue this. And look, it's... I think what's always been a real challenge on the protest side of this, and for people who were trying to understand it or get upset about it, is that unlike in the civil rights movement, there were very clear goals to hit. You know, we want to be able to vote. We want to be able to go to schools that aren't segregated. We want to be able to eat at the counter with white people. There's things you could say. And then people, even in those days, weren't as aware of what was happening, but the beauty of what Martin Luther King did with his activism was he exposed it. He said, hey, we'll go to these places and you'll see how they react to us. You'll see people having dogs sicked on them. You'll see fire hoses and police beating people down. And so it's much harder when you're talking about police brutality to say all cops are bad. See, it's happening again. Well, there could be other factors involved in this. You know, one situation or 10 situations does not mean every police department is evil.
Well,
and that's the problem you've run into.
Another part about it is that the idea of police brutality is not something that is overt. It's not a written policy.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a police policy that says mistreat black people or shoot unarmed black motorists, yeah, you know, on traffic stops. So that those policies that you're talking about, those were overt. Those were, you know, people of African Americans were not allowed to use the restroom. That was on a sign. You know what I mean? Like it was a stated policy, and so it was easier to say, okay, we changed that policy. This is a, if it exists, a covert thing, or even not even an institutional thing. So the idea of eradicating police brutality altogether so that it never happens again is probably not even an achievable goal, like in the world, right? So it just makes it a harder – it doesn't make it not a worthy cause. It just makes it a harder one to define and to – to reach consensus on.
Yeah. Well, and it also becomes the most visible element of the conversation. And I'm always a little bit loath to speak for people or put words in people's mouths. But when I think about what Marcus Peters, his stance, or other players who are protesting but not saying what it's about, I think they don't realize how confusing that is for people who are trying to figure out what's happening. And I would almost guess that for some of the players involved, it's not just about what Colin Kaepernick was saying he was against. I think that a lot of these players, regardless of what they make or how famous they are, a lot of them come from places where they see a lot of systemic problems that are the result of what was happening back in the 60s and 50s and before that, where they see schools that aren't very good. They see a jobless rate that's not very good. They see communities that have been ravaged by drugs, and we can go back to the 1980s and see how crack was brought in the communities, black communities, and how that exploded. And so for them, they see a lot of this stuff, and they think, yeah, I made it out. It's great, but I want to help change that. But it's so nebulous, you know. It's so hard to get your hands around. And really, the only way you can change that stuff is to do things that aren't really sexy, which is to get more involved in the electoral process, to get more involved in voting, which is why when Kaepernick did not vote, it was a huge mistake on his part. I think you have to be more involved in the system, and unfortunately, you don't see as many players doing that as probably should be doing it if they want to get in this fight.
You know, and I think the most important thing that you said there, the point you're trying to make, is trying to understand where other people are coming from that have had different life experiences, and sometimes that's impossible. And for me, it's. Yeah. Look, I've had a much different experience, life experience, than anyone else at this radio station. We all have unique life experiences, none better than anyone else. But, like, you know, my uncle was a KCK police officer before he passed away after battling Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, for a number of years. So, obviously, I was very close to my uncle. I named my first son after him, so I understand where the police officers and their families were coming from. You know, my other uncle, who I named my other son, was badly wounded in Vietnam. My dad served in Vietnam. And so that's always been ingrained in me to respect the military and honor the military and stand for the national anthem. That is unbelievably important to me. And I make it important for my kids and my family and what we've always used. And I don't know what everyone else does because I worry about me and my family. What we've always done is that's a moment of silent reflection that we think about the people in our family and my best friend who served so many tours in Iraq and in Bosnia and Afghanistan. I think about what they've done to sacrifice. And I just, in my mind, I think about them and thank them and pray for them and pray for the ones that are no longer with us. And so that's why it's important to me. But also, you know, I grew up in Northeast off Independence Avenue, and I'm a Mexican American. You know, my grandparents are from Mexico, and I see these things. I got to tell these guys all the time. I mean, the past year or two, some of the stuff that people that I know like put on Facebook,
yeah,
about Mexican Americans, and I'm like, do you know I'm Mexican, and you're sending me these things? Like, how offensive this is to me. But I stand back and I get it. That's the climate now, yeah. You know, and so I try to understand from all different angles, and sometimes that's even impossible for me. But I think it is possible to do what you want to do respectfully, but also understand why someone is doing what they are doing respectfully. And I think that's where, for many times, it gets lost.
It
because
does.
We don't understand what it's like to walk in that person's shoes. I guess.
Yeah, and we don't want to. And that it's more of a cultural situation. It's more of a societal issue for me now because, you know, I said this before, when Kaepernick did what he did, we live in a world where we don't listen as well as we should. We don't ask questions. We don't say, well, that guy's doing that. Why would he do that? And let me ask him why. And let me try to understand where he's coming from. We say, well, that's not right. That's not what you should be doing. That's not the way I do it. That's not what it's supposed to be. And really, when you get down to it, the flag, the national anthem, they're symbols. So they're open to interpretation. You know, like you said, like some people see it as, hey, this is our way of honoring the military. Some people see it as this is what our country is supposed to be about. This is what, and some people feel right now like the country is not representing what it should be. I'm with you. I don't believe in kneeling, sitting for the anthem. I was taught to do that at an early age, so I respect that. But I also feel as if this conversation has gotten to a point now where people are not willing to say, maybe that guy has a point. You know, maybe I should listen to what's going on in their world, because, again, I go back to that. I won't even take it back to civil rights. You can go back to the 1770s. I'm sure the people in England weren't happy when people in this country started protesting. You know, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong with them over there? I'm sure when women wanted to vote, guys were like, are you crazy? You got a good life. Right. What are you complaining about? You know what I'm saying? I had a teacher in college that said it very well, and to this day I believe it. Change in this country tends to not happen without bloodshed, because we have a hard time understanding that maybe somebody is not as happy as we think they are. You know?
Right.
Well, I'd say that's not just this country. Change doesn't happen in most countries without bloodshed. And this could get into an entire topic about how our revolution was less bloody than many of the other revolutions were, and all that stuff. But I would like to make a point, because I heard a couple people, like you said, listening to the radio all day, and a lot of people calling in with opinions and things like that. And I think one of the things that you're pointing out is it's a lot easier in anybody's mind, if somebody does something we disagree with, to demonize that person and to consider that person to be bad. You're a spoiled brat millionaire athlete who disrespects the military. You're a bad person. Instead of asking ourselves in any situation, why are you doing this? Like you said, it's an uncomfortable conversation for me to have. Do you have a point? And on either side, do you have a point? You know, is there something we could, and that's a harder conversation to have. And I heard a comment made yesterday that I think needs to be addressed, which is the idea that a spoiled brat millionaire professional athlete is kneeling because he doesn't think the country is fair to him. I personally don't believe that's what these players, almost any of them, are kneeling for. I don't think they're kneeling because they think that the country is unfair to them. I think they're kneeling for the people that they think the country is unfair to. They are kneeling to represent people who don't have the voice that they have. That, you know, a player like Marcus Peters comes from a community where he sees a lot of people who he doesn't think the country's been fair to, and he's at a platform now where he, and I'm putting words in Marcus Peters' mouth, and no, maybe I'm wrong.
I think you're right.
But I think he's trying to take a stand for those people, not because he thinks it's unfair to him, but because he's trying to do it for someone else. And I think that's a point, that's a distinction that should be made and respected to a certain extent.
Yeah. And you know, I know we have to go to a break. I'll say this to end this, wrap it up. It's just, there have been mistakes made in this process on the player's part. I mean, Colin Kaepernick did not articulate himself very well. I don't think it was right to, just as I don't think it was right for Donald Trump to call these players SOBs, it wasn't right for him to wear socks with pigs on them or to wear a Fidel Castro t-shirt. That just,
right,
you know, makes things worse. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to be provocative, if you're going to go this route, you have to be prepared to say what you feel is important. You have to be prepared to try to pull people in as opposed to planting a flag and just putting a wall up. And I think there are players who are doing that. Malcolm Jenkins has been to Congress. Players in Miami have been involved with the police down there. There's players who are doing this, and it's not getting the same kind of press, because when you speak out and you yell and you scream and you say controversial things, that's what gets the headlines. That's what gets us talking. But I think good things are happening. And unfortunately, when you talk about race, when you're trying to change things in society, it's not going to be a pretty process. This is all part of it, and in the end, I hope that it ends up making us all better for it.
Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com is in studio. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Todd Lebo, please leave the studio and quit harassing our guests. Now, Jeff, the Chiefs did what they needed to do against the L.A. Chargers. Kareem Hunt with 172 yards on the ground, including a 69-yard touchdown run to seal the deal. Justin Houston looked very good again. And Terrence Mitchell had a couple of interceptions. And Phillip Rivers looked horrible. Any takeaway from the Chiefs' 24-10 victory over the Chargers?
Well, you know, if you're picking the MVP right now, Kareem Hunt's probably going to win it.
Yes.
You know, the pace he's on.
Oh, look at Jake's face right now. Boy, he loves that.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
true.
It's like he's been, as much as we've talked about the Chiefs being more aggressive, throwing the ball downfield, he's been the biggest difference, right? I do, you know, we started this show talking about the Raiders and the Redskins. There are some concerning things I see with the Chiefs.
What?
Pass protection, for one. I mean, they've got some big issues, as much as we talk about wanting to throw the ball down the field. I mean, the last two games, they've had some issues trying to control some pretty good pass rushers. So I do wonder how that's going to affect their offense. They didn't play very good offensively once they got past the first quarter and really away those two turnovers that Phillip Rivers gave them. It's been a much tougher game. The penalties continue to be a problem. Travis Kelce got his temper under control, then Marcus Peters took over, took the baton and ran with it.
And Justin Houston headbutted him a couple of times.
I mentioned this earlier in the offseason because I kind of saw it coming, and I think you're seeing it more now, is this team transitions away from that era of Tom Mahali, Derek Johnson, Jamal Charles, that team, guys who were more quiet, more buttoned down. Now you're moving into a team that's going to be more personality driven, more wide open, more combustible, and that's going to be an interesting transition to make because this team is so young, and they look up to guys like Travis, they look up to guys like Marcus, who are great players and great people, by the way. I never want to get that confused when I talk about this part of it, but they play on an edge. They play with an edge that is sometimes hard to control, and that is going to be the challenge for Andy Reid, and that's going to be the challenge for the other coaches and for the Chiefs in general, to not have that become a situation where they're in a key game and guys can't control themselves. Because with that kind of greatness, and with that kind of, again, combustible element involved with it, you get into a big game against teams that know that you can be pushed, buttons can be pushed, and it could be a tough situation.
Okay, so in the Philadelphia game, Travis Kelce had 8 receptions for 103 yards and a touchdown and a personal foul and sportsmanlike conduct penalty. In the Chargers game, no penalties, 1 reception for 1 yard. Which game would we take? I mean,
it's kind of a false equivalency. Yeah, exactly. They could be covering him differently.
And I'm not saying that he has to have a 15-yard penalty in order to have it a 100-yard receiving day, but it's like, I don't know, man. I mean, are we getting a little carried away with our outrage at a few of these penalties?
Well, what you don't know is how much will that one catch game affect the way he plays the next game? Is he going to come out with more attitude, with more of a chip on his shoulder, with more of a desire to make plays, and is he going to be so amped up that it boils over? Because you go back to the first game, he didn't have a great game, and then all of a sudden he has this game. He's playing against his brother in the Eagles, and he's getting it going. I was in Seattle, and I saw Richard Sherman have a total meltdown. You know, after he got, I think he got hit for a pass interference, got hit for holding on the return of the interception. And then he went off on the ref, and they had to, like, literally calm him down. And then 3 plays later, or about 10 minutes later, Marcus Mariota's running toward the sideline. He comes out of nowhere, lays him out. Fight almost breaks out.
He negated an interception, too, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
How did he not – he didn't get ejected either, did he?
Well, the rules are that you get ejected if you have 2 personal fouls that are related to taunting or fighting. And it's not, like, the same as in the field of play. So that was the second hit was considered – you know, just like, okay, he tried to hit the guy, and he was out of bounds, so that was a different situation. But again, it's like you become within one bad decision of being kicked out of the game.
But Stephen pointed it out earlier, the Seahawks led the league in penalties 2 years in a row, and they went to the Super Bowl both those years and won one of them.
And they choose to play that way. That's how they manage that team. They get players who are wired in that direction.
But maybe that's the way the Chiefs are now, because look at all the I want to say outgoing personalities. Yeah. Like, I mean, Marcus Peters, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, and then Chris Jones hasn't had one of these penalties, but he's
even Justin Houston had to be calmed down at one point in the game. These are fiery competitors that play on the edge, and that's.
And I think you have to have that kind of element on a football team to really be a championship football team, and most people would probably agree with me on that. I look at the Carolina Panthers when they lost Josh Norman, who was like half crazy, and he things changed when he left town.
He looked pretty good on Sunday night, shutting down the Raiders' offense.
Exactly, looked pretty good. So I like having that. I don't want to say fear because it's not really a fear. You have to have a certain mentality to deal with a lot of players who are like that. I think Pete Carroll has that mentality, and he understands that at some point you got to get rid of some of these guys. You got to, you know, that's why he was good in college, because he would just like cycle them through. You know, right. When you have an NFL team where guys are around 7-8 years, at some point that can overtake your locker room, and you begin to have problems that are like in Seattle. They've had major issues with defense being versus offense, Richard Sherman being against Russell Wilson. That stuff can wear you down. That kind of drama day in and we just talked about their offseason, like. It was the worst thing ever. That's every year in Seattle.
And they traded for Sheldon Richardson.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what's he going to bring to the table?
Yeah, that's every year in Seattle.
don't drive with him anywhere.
So, I'm not saying you shouldn't have that. I think it helps you. But I think you should be aware of you're going to have games where it's going to be a problem.
Okay, so you talk about out there personalities. When Andy Reid made the Super Bowl, the one year he got to the Super Bowl, yeah. Who was the star of his offense?
Yep, Terrell Owens.
Right.
Yeah,
and I seems like he dealt with those distractions. Okay, yeah.
And you saw where that went. Well, he dealt with it for a year.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, he's doing the sit-ups in his driveway.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it blew up on him, and it blew up, and really, it almost, you know, the subtext of that whole situation was that locker room became very divided into a T.O. camp and a Donovan McNabb camp, and to this day, McNabb will tell you that he never liked how that played out. And that there were younger players who liked T.O., and there were older guys who said, hey, McNabb's our leader. We got to stick with him. And that's always going to be – what's that?
They got to the big game, though.
They did. Well, that's the thing. If you want that kind of payoff, but then you could also argue that it was the beginning of the end for Andy Reid in that town.
Right.
It's like things just fell apart from there.
And so, okay, so you – I'm glad you brought up the offense. They weren't as good in the second half. And look, the big play was Kareem Hunt. And they gave it to him three straight times. He picked up that final first down and then got the touchdown. But I was looking at Brian Baldinger's tweets yesterday, and he had some interesting tweets about the Chiefs and about their offense. And look, he's played very well. Not going to criticize Alex Smith, but there was a couple of missed opportunities, and he has one that he tweeted out and shows that he just missed a touchdown. He didn't get wide open, and he checked down to DeAnthony Thomas and missed it. And so he just made the point, Alex Smith needs to continue to evolve with this offense. And you've seen it, but it's still a work in progress. He has to continue to change his approach. It's a new era in KC, and speed changes everything. And he said that the offense with the Chiefs, and I agree with this, and you've talked about this, Andy Reid changing as well. He said Chiefs have revamped an entire playbook and the plays. Like when Bill Walsh was around, they keep on coming. So fun to watch. And so now, based on the talent that's there, and so it's not just Alex Smith changing; it's the personnel changing and Andy Reid changing because he has these weapons. So it really is a different approach on offense because of what you have.
It is. And look, I don't know what the other throw he missed was. The one I saw was the one to Tyreek Hill down the sideline, which I don't have as much of a problem with because. You know, what Baldy's not saying there is, like, if you're 6'4 and you're running that route, if you're Julio Jones, okay, let's take a chance. Let's put it a little more in the field of play, and he'll go up and get it. If you're throwing to a guy who's 5'9", it's a little bit more of a risk. And so when that ball lands out of bounds, you're living to fight another day. And in that game quickly became a situation of, hey, Phillip Rivers is going to give this to us.
Right.
As long as we're not doing what he's doing, we're going to be all right. And so
it's like the Raiders in the 90s, wait till the fourth quarter and they'll self-destruct and we win.
Yeah, except that it was like the first 10 minutes.
Right, right. Oh, yeah.
As soon as they kicked off, all right, here we go. Here's the game. And as I said before, their pass rush was giving the Chiefs problems. When I didn't see every play of the game.
Right.
But Melvin Ingram had three sacks. And I remember I saw him go right by Travis Kelce, and I think it was Who was it?
It was the Mitchell
right
Schwartz.
Mitchell Schwartz on one play. Just like it was like he was like Lawrence Taylor.
And those happen. And you know, I think we were talking to Sam Mellinger, and I kind of disagree with it. So but I'm not going to get to it until today now. But the Chiefs really didn't go into a shell offensively. Those the protection problems happened, and those sacks happened because they were trying to go deep.
Exactly.
They were looking to go deep.
Yeah.
But the protection didn't hold up, or there was coverage, or Alex Smith just missed a guy, or whatever. And so they were taking some shots because there was one drive where it was three and out, and they didn't even give it to Kareem Hunt.
Yeah.
And if you got a lead in the second half and you have a drive that goes three and out, you didn't give the ball to Hunt once, I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
But we'll see how that evolves.
Yeah.
But they were dropping back and trying to take some chances.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, just because you're not hitting the play doesn't mean you're not being aggressive, what you're saying. And also, just because you end up winning a game 24-10 and your quarterback throws for 160 yards doesn't mean it's a bad day.
Well,
like, it's like if he had made one or two plays trying to make a play down the field and they had been picked off, they might lose that game. And then it's a really different
like
conversation.
Rivers did.
Like Rivers did.
And that goes back to my point why I would take Alex Smith over Phillip Rivers right now. I know it's not sexy to watch your quarterback take a sack. It's frustrating to watch him stand back there and hold the ball and look like he can't make a decision and then eat a sack. It's a lot less frustrating than watching him just throw the ball up in the air for grabs like Phillip Rivers did probably four or five other times in the game that didn't end up in picks. And a couple times he got rewarded. A couple times they had a deep pass down the field where he just fired the ball up in the air and their guy won a jump ball.
Yep.
But you're like, yeah, man, you keep doing that and you're going to throw three picks in the game and you're going to cost your team the game. The other thing about it, you're the one that points this out all the time, Jeff, is that most sacks in the NFL come not because the guy on defense flat out beat his man, but because of a breakdown of communication. That sack you're talking about, I don't know whose guy it was, if it was Kelsey's or if it was Schwartz's. I have a guess. It looked like Schwartz was really dependent on Kelsey to hit him there, but somebody was supposed to pick up the guy, and they didn't. And that must have happened three or four times in that game where there just was a miscommunication on a stunt or something like that. Somebody didn't get picked up, and Alex Smith ate a sack.
Let me go ahead and tell you that Kelsey is not blocking.
So
let's just go ahead and say bad matchup then.
Yeah, right.
Sort of chip him and then, you know, pass him off to Schwartz.
Yeah.
Okay, but, you know.
Yeah, well, it's like, I guess the larger point here is all that stuff goes on film, right? And so the longer they keep playing, the more defensive coordinators around the league are going to be saying, yeah, they got some great players, but, hey, they want to run this formation. They want to run this play. They get this look. We're coming. We like this matchup because they can't block it. And so at some point, if you're Andy Reid, that's the chess match you play because, okay, I want my quarterback getting hit. You know, remember Andy Reid and Alex Smith got banged up against Philly towards the end of the first half.
Right. The way he fell and the defender landed on top of him, it looked like it could have been a shoulder injury.
Yeah. And so that's as much as we want that. And we all said this. You know, they're going to be more aggressive, yeah. But there are going to be games where it's going to be like it was last year just because of just straight out survival. And when you play in those games, I think you learn more about your team than you do when you're throwing for 400 yards and four touchdowns and it's super pretty. Because I think that means you know different ways of how to win games.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will get Jeff's thoughts on the Monday night matchup next week between the Chiefs and the Redskins at Arrowhead. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Finally, you said it before I did. Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Okay, so the Redskins were very impressive in their dismantling of the Oakland Raiders. And look, I expected the Redskins to put up numbers and put up yards, but I did not expect the Redskins to shut down the Raiders' offense. And so now the Redskins will come into Arrowhead flying high and confident on Monday Night Football. What do you think of this matchup that we'll see?
I like the Chiefs. You know, being at home, I've learned more about them in the last two games than I learned in the first game. I thought that, you know, great, they had big numbers and had some highlight plays, but the way they played in the fourth quarter, the way they've been able to lean on Kareem Hunt and the way he's responded in difficult moments, you know, Alex Smith has played very efficiently. Their defense has made plays. I just don't think the Redskins have enough to really counter what the Chiefs can do to them, both on offense and defense and in special teams if they are able to get you know, get that going. They've had good coverage, but not great returns just yet. But I think with Dave Tobe running that unit, you'll see that improve quickly. But I think overall, the Redskins to me were an 8-8, 9-7 team. Again, they had a big win at home against the Raiders, but I just don't see them coming in here and really getting a win.
What do you think of Jay Gruden as a head coach? And I will say that Greg Minuski has had some success as a defensive coordinator against the Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium before. I have a lot of respect for him as a defensive coordinator. But what's your opinion of Jay Gruden as a head coach?
He's okay. You know, he's a pretty good coordinator, pretty good play caller. You saw them, you know, going their second running back and getting a big receiving game out of that kid, 150 yards I think he had, which is pretty impressive. But
yeah, that was against me, by the way, fantasy football. So I was not impressed at all by Chris Thompson, and he angered me repeatedly. And so, damn it.
Yeah. But I will say this: that the Chiefs have a better defense than the Raiders do. They can cause more problems for the Redskins up front and on the back end if they play the way they played against San Diego. Again, I think they will create problems for Kirk Cousins. I don't see the depth of weapons in the Redskins offense that makes me think, okay, this team can come in here and really create some problems.
How good is Josh Norman?
I'm a big Josh Norman fan. I think he's one of the top five corners in the league. The attitude he brings is infectious, as we talked about. He does what Marcus Peters does for this team. He makes players around him feel like they can play at a higher level because he's going to do things and make plays that are going to be problematic for an opponent. Now, we'll see how the Chiefs attack him because, you know, he's one of those guys who plays on one side of the field, and I'm sure they'll probably make sure that Tyreek Hill is matched up against the other corner. But no, he'll make plays for you. He'll do things that will change games.
Kirk Cousins had not been very good in the first 2 weeks, but at a coming out party for this season against the Raiders, where are you? This has been an interesting discussion point. And finally, Kirk Cousins comes to Arrowhead Stadium, not the way that Jake wanted him to come to Arrowhead Stadium, but still he'll be here. Now, what is your what's everyone's opinion of Kirk Cousins before we talk about this after the fact next Tuesday? Let's get it on record here.
Well, he's solid to me. He's not great. If I had to say, he's one of the top 15 quarterbacks. He's probably where Alex is with a different mindset, throwing the football, a different offense that he's playing in. You know, I know he had bigger numbers, but numbers to me don't mean much if you're not winning games. And I think he's won something like 16 games in the 2 years he started. So, again, good guy. I think he's with the right coach. He can be a pretty productive player. I think Gruden's getting a lot out of him, but he's not going to go there and just destroy you.
Pounders, Nate, Kirk Cousins. You're no fan of his.
I'm gonna be interested to see what kind of numbers he puts up this year now that he doesn't have, the two big star big play wide receivers.
Pierre Garçon.
Pierre Garçon and Deshaun Jackson.
Well, they signed Terrell Pryor, and that is they have not been on the same page yet.
Yeah.
And so
he had a nice touchdown catch on Monday night, but I mean, he's not Deshaun Jackson. He can't stretch the field like Deshaun Jackson can. And I think James Crowder is, I think he's a good young wide receiver who has a lot of potential. And you know, their tight end can't stay healthy, so.
Right.
I think that's a big deal, too.
Yeah, but not, you know what? They can run the ball, and they have an assortment of running backs that could hurt you. So what's the final score going to be, Jeff?
Oh, I will take the Chiefs 27-14.
Yeah, that's right.
27-14. How many touchdown passes for Alex Smith?
Two.
Oh, boy.
Two touchdowns for him and one for Hunt. A couple field goals in for good measure.
Cairo Santos. All right, Jeff Chedia, thank you so much for the great talk. And next Tuesday, you're going to have to help us because we're going to be on fumes, my friend.
It's going to be early morning, late night, early morning. Is Jake going to be here? What's the over-under on Jake making it in here?
I'll be here.
Hashtag find Jake.
Is he going to be under the table? Or
I'll be babysitting these
the
two guys.
The wild card we've had to worry about as late as me.
Is that
he's
right?
been painting the town painting the wall, painting everything.
That midlife
after,
crisis.
That was after a championship, all right? And I answered the bell, and I was here.
That's
right.
But you
were here.
Get after kinda. You were, yeah, physically.
No, man, I was locked in for that show.
That was it. Yeah, we were going to try to lock you in the bathroom for that show.
I was going
to
say.
So thank you,
hey,
Jeff.
If the
Didia.
Chiefs win the Super Bowl,
thank
I will
you.
Stay up all night as well.
You need to settle down.
I'm locked into a recliner.
Thank you for listening to the Border Patrol. Come and see me tonight at Power Plane in Northland. The competition's from 3 until 7. I'll be there from 4 until question mark. Compete to take part in the Coaches versus Cancer Papa Shot Championship in front of Bill Self, Konzo Martin, Bruce Weber, and Norm Stewart. Your chance to qualify tonight at Power Play in the Northland on Sports Radio 810 WHB.